Kari Khalil replies, "We, the Finnish listeners, have been supporting art from the beginning in a good cycle. No coincidence, one of the cornerstones of the radio station is still the record request."
This is Lee Hazelwood.
And Nancy Sinatra.
You know, some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna turn on
WGXC Macra, Hudson Catskill.
Hey, cowboy, where'd you get that funny hat?
90.7 FM.
Every Thursday evening from 5 to 7 p.m., Left Bank Ciders in Catskill holds a community soup night. Every Thursday, they gather to eat soup made by members of our community, with all the proceeds benefiting a local cause. The soup is homemade, delicious, and affordable. A donation gets you a bowl, some bread, and lots of camaraderie. There's always a vegetarian soup option, and a different charity or cause gets the funds raised each week. They have held several community soup nights for your community radio station, WGXC. Left Bank Ciders is at 150 Water Street in Catskill, and community soup night is there every Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the Office of the Governor and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the Greene County Cultural Fund, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC monthly supporters, whose generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You, too, can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate, and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support. WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. WGXC local business supporters help us continue to be a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Thank you, Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant.
My people. What can I say? Say what I can. I saw it, but I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it, what I saw. Are we gonna live together? Together, are we gonna live? This is your Mr. Senior Love Daddy talking to you from We Love Radio 108 FM on your dial. And that's the triple truth, Ruth. Today's weather, hot!
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Bill Maloney reports for Politico that it is a congressional election year and in New York, the district lines are still not drawn. In December, a state court of appeals threw out the current lines and gave the state's Independent Redistricting Commission a February 28th deadline to produce new draft congressional districts. Candidates begin collecting petitions to run for the still unknown districts on February 27th. But local boards of elections have said they would prefer the districts be made public around February 1st. The commission still needs to come up with the new district lines, and the legislature has to vote to accept them. But the commissioners who are deciding the new district lines have not scheduled a public meeting since planning one was held a few days after Christmas. Common Cause New York Executive Director Susan Lerner said, and I quote, "Conducting business behind closed doors is unacceptable. Open your doors to the people. The people who live in congressional districts deserve a say in who will represent them," end quote. The judge ruled in their December decision that the commission is not required to, and I quote, "conduct any solicitation of public commentary beyond what it has done previously," end quote. It is possible that the congressional primary is delayed, as in 2022, when the court ordered new district lines to be drawn, the primaries moved from June to August. Read more about this story in Politico. Tessa Bentulin reports for WNYT that the Rensselaer County Legislature unanimously voted this week to set up a new registry for drug dealers. The registry will be a list tracking where convicted drug dealers in the county are living, similar to a sex offender registry. Rensselaer County District Attorney Mary Pat Donnelly said, and I quote, "I think what I want the community to know is this is your elected legislators' response to what we hear time and time again out in the community. What can we do about these drug dealers? How can we keep these drugs out of our communities?" End quote. The registry will include 16-year-olds and up, even though the state's new Raise the Age law changed the age that a child can be prosecuted as an adult to 18 in criminal cases in New York State. Read more about this story at WNYT. Andrea Mako reports for Porcupine Soup that Thomas Cole's painting, View Near Catskill, sold January 18th for more than $500,000 at Christie's Auction House in New York City. An undisclosed buyer paid $504,000 for View Near Catskill. The painting, created in 1828 and 1829, shows the plateau of Jefferson Heights in the foreground and Catskill High Peak and Round Top Mountain. Cole is considered to be the first major American landscape painter, and the Thomas Cole House in Catskill celebrates his work. View Near Catskill was originally owned by General Stephen Van Rensselaer III, a U.S. congressperson, president of the Albany Institute, and a founder of Rensselaer Polytech Institute. Read more about this story at Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXE Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
Diana Delbova reports for the New York Post that campaigning for Donald Trump in New Hampshire on January 20th, Representative Elise Stefanik said she would be, and I quote, honored, end quote, to be his vice president. Stefanik, who currently represents Rensselaer County and the rest of the 21st Congressional District, said, and I quote, "He's going to make the right decision. I trust him to make the right decision for him. So he's going to look for qualities that I think are important. I'd be proud to serve in a Trump administration in any capacity," end quote. Volunteers for Trump chanted VP after her remarks at one New Hampshire campaign stop for the former president. Read more about this story in the New York Post. Mid-Hudson News reports that dozens of members of Jewish federations of Ulster, Dutchess, and Orange counties thanked Representative Pat Ryan for his continued work to free hostages still being held by Hamas, including Americans and the families of Hudson Valley resident last week. Ryan, a Democrat representing the 18th Congressional District, has seen weekly protests at his Kingston office calling for him to support a ceasefire in the war in Gaza. Nearby Republican Mark Molinaro in the 19th Congressional District has not seen similar protests or letters of support, even though he also does not back a ceasefire. The local members of the Jewish Federations gave Ryan a thank you letter with 400 signatures from local constituents. The letter also said, and I quote, "As a number of anti-Semitic incidents continue to increase at an alarming rate, we applaud your continued effort to root out hate from the Hudson Valley," end quote. Ron David Gold, president of the Jewish Federation of Ulster County, called Ryan a, and I quote, "true champion of the Hudson Valley Jewish community," end quote. Read more about this story in Mid-Hudson News. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Representative Pat Ryan again said on January 23rd that Central Hudson should not get its rate approval request approved by the Public Service Commission. On January 24th, Central Hudson proposed a double-digit rate request went before an Albany evidentiary hearing. Before that, Ryan said in a statement, and I quote, "Hudson Valley families are feeling the pressure of making ends meet. Central Hudson has absolutely no business raising rates, especially after years of systematic failures," end quote. Central Hudson is asking New York Public Service Commission to increase rates by 16% and natural gas rates by 19%. The utility claims that would add roughly $1 a day to the, and I quote, "typical," end quote, electric customer and $1 a day to the, and I quote, "typical," end quote, natural gas customer. The Public Service Commission is not expected to decide on the rate increase until the second quarter of the year. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Representative Elise Stefanik has had a week of national headlines. Salon reports Stefanik, who represents Rensselaer County and the rest of the 21st Congressional District, called the cancellation of the January 22nd trial proceedings in writer E. Jean Carroll's defamation trial against Donald Trump, and I quote, "blatant election interference," end quote. After a juror called in sick, the judge wanted to continue, but Trump attorney Alina Haba asked for an adjournment. So Stefanik is calling Trump's attorney's motion to delay the trial, and I quote, "blatant election interference," end quote. Stefanik is also mentioned by comedian Jimmy Kimmel, who spoke on January 22nd about Trump talking about her after her name was floated as possible vice president.
Also can't seem to pronounce the name of his possible running mate, Elise Stefanik.
Do you see that, the three people? How good did Elise Stefanik do?
I love that little pause when he sees the name on the teleprompter. He's like, "Oh, here we go, Elise Stefanik, dude."
Mid-Hudson News reports that protesters who want Representative Pat Ryan to back a ceasefire in the war in Gaza repeatedly interrupted his speech at the Ulster County Regional Chamber of Commerce breakfast on January 24th. Protesters waved signs outside of the event and inside. They shouted over his speech. Mid-Hudson News got video from the protesters of the interruptions.
Pat Ryan, how many more Palestinians have to be killed before you call for a ceasefire? Before you call this a genocide?
Please just stay in your seat
and keep our attention
on the congressman.
Thank you.
In anticipation.
Representative Ryan, we worked so hard to represent you. Where are you going to represent us? I'm a Jewish Ulster County resident. I'm your constituent, and we want ceasefire. Ceasefire now! Ceasefire now!
Why are you allowing the mass displacement and murder of innocent people with...
Ceasefire now! Ceasefire now!
Shame! Shame!
I will promise you my first answer
military aid in Israel while Ulster County residents are facing a housing crisis.
Pro-Palestinian protesters have regularly marched outside Ryan's Kingston office calling for a ceasefire. Republican Representative Mark Molinaro from the neighboring 19th Congressional District holds similar views of the conflict as Ryan, but is not seeing as many protesters at his events or offices. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
The road to death penalty abolition runs through Alabama and Oklahoma. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Countless cases lay bare the raw injustice of the death penalty in the United States. The case of Richard Glossop is certainly one of them. He's been on Oklahoma's death row since 1998, facing 9 separate execution dates. He's been given his final meal 3 times, and in 2015 was saved from death just hours before his execution, only after prison officials admitted they'd ordered the wrong drug for their lethal cocktail. Richard Glossop has always maintained his innocence in the 1997 murder of Barry Van Trees, who employed him as a motel manager in Oklahoma City. The flawed prosecution had no physical evidence linking him to the crime, only the testimony of the actual killer, Justin Sneed, another motel employee who'd already confessed to the crime, implicated Glossop. In exchange, Sneed was able to avoid the death penalty. Last Monday, Richard Glossop was granted what might be his last lifeline. The U.S. Supreme Court, after issuing a stay of execution last May, announced it will hear his appeal. Even Oklahoma's elected Republican Attorney General, Gentner Drummond, is supporting Glossop's appeal. In agreeing to hear the case, the Supreme Court expects the parties to answer several questions, including, quote, whether due process of law requires reversal where a capital conviction is so infected with errors that the state no longer seeks to defend it, unquote. In addition to Attorney General Drummond, a bipartisan group of Oklahoma state legislators is also advocating for Glossop. After Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt and the Oklahoma Pardon and Parole Board failed to act on the group's clemency recommendation, the legislators recruited the Reed Smith Law Firm to conduct a pro bono independent inquiry. Between June and September 2022, the law firm released 4 reports detailing flaws in the prosecution's case and Justin Sneed's attempts to recant his testimony against Glossop and the prosecution's efforts to stop him from recanting. In their 343-page final report, Reed Smith attorneys detailed the case's many problems. They wrote, "The state's destruction and loss of key evidence before Glossop's retrial deprived the defense from using the evidence at trial and has deprived the defense today of the ability to perform forensic testing using DNA and technology advancements. The tunnel vision and deficient police investigation, the prosecution's failure to vet evidence and further distortion of it to fit its flawed narrative, and a cascade of errors and missed opportunities by defense attorneys fundamentally call into question the fairness of the proceedings and the ultimate reliability of the guilty verdict against Glossop for murder," they wrote. Since the Supreme Court stayed Glossop's execution last May, a Republican-led group of Oklahoma legislators formed a committee seeking a moratorium on the state's death penalty overall. The likelihood that Richard Glossop, an innocent man, could be executed was the primary motivation behind the effort. Oklahoma already imposed a brief execution moratorium after a botched execution in 2014 called into question the state's lethal injection protocol. Oklahoma lawmakers then passed a law that would allow the state to kill using an experimental technique referred to as nitrogen hypoxia, or nitrogen asphyxiation, which had never been used. Scores of workers have died in industrial accidents from nitrogen gas leaks and spilled liquid nitrogen, including 6 people who died at a poultry plant in Gainesville, Georgia, in 2021. Accidents like this have led those who defy execution methods to look to nitrogen as the latest foolproof method to kill. As of this writing, Alabama will be the first state to use nitrogen gas, with its scheduled execution of Kenneth Smith on January 25th. Smith survived Alabama's first attempt to kill him by lethal injection in November 2022. The executioners frantically sought a vein to deliver the deadly cocktail, resorting at one point to subjecting Smith, strapped to a gurney, to an inverted crucifixion position. As one person on the team repeatedly and painfully jabbed a needle under his collarbone. Even Alabama's ultra-conservative Republican governor, Kay Ivey, saw the need to explore alternative means of execution, hence this new foray into gassing people to death. Grotesque abuses of state power, as in Oklahoma and Alabama, are what led the late U.S. Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun to conclude in a dissenting opinion in a 1994 case, quote, "The death penalty remains fraught with arbitrariness, discrimination, caprice, and mistake," he said. Blackmun, a conservative when appointed by President Nixon in 1970, rendered increasingly liberal opinions during his tenure on the bench. He wrote the Roe v. Wade opinion, for example. In his 1994 death penalty dissent, Blackmun pledged, "From this day forward, I no longer shall tinker with the machinery of death," unquote. According to the Death Penalty Information Center, there are over 2,300 prisoners on death row in the United States. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC Weekend Weather Report. On Sunday, there will be rain and snow likely before 10 a.m. Then it will turn to all snow. The temperature high will be around 34 degrees and a north wind at 6 to 8 miles per hour. And on Sunday night, snow is likely mainly before 1 a.m. with a temperature low of around 27 degrees. And on Monday, it will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high of around 35 degrees. And that is your weekend weather report from WGXE 90.7 FM radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tuesday, January 23rd, was a busy day at the state capitol. Hudson Mohawk Magazine covered events with the Renewable Heat Now campaign, parole reform, and the New York Immigration Coalition. For part one, we start off with Betta Broad of New Yorkers for Clean Power and Laura Schindel of Food and Water Watch. Scheduled also in this at the same time, we will then also hear about elder parole and other parole reforms.
He acts now! He acts now!
It's Betta Broad. I'm the campaign director of New Yorkers for Clean Power and the Director of Advocacy and Organizing at the Association for Energy Affordability. I'm here with my dear colleague, Laura.
Please. I'm Laura Schindel. I'm a senior organizer with Food and Water Watch.
We have an amazing turnout. Over 300 people from across the state came here to rally for New York. Yay!
Governor Hochul included key parts of the New York Heat Act in her executive budget. This is a huge deal. Governor Hochul has signaled that she's ready to take the next big step on climate. And she signaled that she's committed to delivering relief to New Yorkers across the state who are struggling to pay rising energy bills and who are suffering through fossil fuel-fueled extreme weather. Now we need Speaker Hasty to make the same commitment and put the HEAT Act in the One House budget.
Right. Any more time. We have to transition now off of this outdated, dangerous, toxic, fracked gas system that is driving climate change.
Right.
We have suffered through poisonous air, through orange skies, through smoky air, through unhealthy conditions, through floods, through record-breaking heat waves. What more do we have to witness until we get off this dangerous system and transition to clean energy and clean heat now?
Yes.
What's worse is we are being asked to keep dumping billions and billions of dollars into this outdated system. We're pouring this money into the fracked gas system, which leads to utilities across the state raising rates for people who can't afford it. It's unacceptable. Some New Yorkers are going to see their energy bills go up by $75 a month.
That ain't right.
We have to get off the fracked gas system as quickly as possible, and we need to do it now.
The New York Heat Act is the solution we need. It will kickstart our transition off of fracked gas and enable gas providers to invest in renewable heating instead. It will also end the $200 million in subsidies that we are paying every year to expanding the fracked gas system. Because by law, every house has to get connected to the gas system for free if it is near a gas main. And most importantly, it will get rid of the obligation to serve. Right now, every customer that asks for gas must get connected to gas by law to the fracked gas system. Getting rid of this gas guzzling system will be a huge boost to our transition to clean energy. All of this, New York Heat Act will reduce future gas rate hikes, like the ones pummeling New Yorkers right now across the state.
Governor Hochul included all of this in her executive budget. However, he left out one key part: additional protections for low-income families that are struggling to pay their energy bills every month. This is crucial. New York Heat Act utility bills will be limited to 6% of a family's income. This would save families up to $75 a month on their energy.
We can't afford to stay on fracked gas. We need the legislature. We need Speaker Hasty to follow Governor Hochul's lead and put the HEAT Act in the budget.
Our coverage of parole reform starts with Senator Brad Hoyman Siegel, lead sponsor of Elder Parole, followed by Assemblymember Michelle Zelajes, who is head of the Black and Puerto Rican Caucus, and then Brian Hill, a paralegal with Legal Aid in Rochester, who spent much of his life in prison.
It is past time that we allow, we're just allowing, older incarcerated individuals to have an opportunity before a parole board. And as Senator Salazar, our champion on the Corrections Committee, said, it's not about automatic release. It's about having the chance at parole. Right? If you're 55 years or older and have served at least 15 years, we just want you to have the opportunity to go before the parole board. Isn't that fair?
Yes!
Isn't that just?
Yes!
And I was speaking to Mr. Steele over here, and he said to me, and he's absolutely right, that it is unconscionable that these individuals don't have a shot at parole now, automatically. And it's unconscionable what we're doing by keeping them behind bars, separated from our community. And it is harmful to our local economy that we can't return these men and women to become real activated members of their local community to support their families and their small businesses and their community organizations. So
the BPH caucus released their budget priorities, a people's agenda, and the tagline for this year is a demand for justice. So what do we want?
Justice!
And we particularly want parole justice. Because we know that the war on drugs was really a war on people, and that Black and brown communities were at the brunt end, and we today are still suffering from the effects of mass incarceration.
That ain't right!
That's why we need to ensure that our elders are given dignity and given an opportunity to stand before the parole board. That's all we're asking. And so we stand here united as the caucus members, 77 of us, demanding that this bill come to the floor.
Yeah.
And that we want it now, because we cannot wait. We need to bring dignity to our community.
Yeah.
You say that you're in line, you want health equity, you want equality for all, you want to make sure that Black and brown folks are given and closing, the disparity gaps are closing. So show us that.
That's right.
Don't talk about it, be about it.
Brian Belt, I'm a paralegal at the Legal Aid Society Decarceration Project. I'm also 1199 SEIU union delegate. I served 18 years and 9 months in prison. I went to six parole boards. My first initial three parole boards, I was denied without the full record. They didn't have my sentencing minutes. So I was denied 6 years without them even having the complete record. So what type of consideration is that? When I was released,